Hi, here we are, our third session. Welcome, everyone. I want you to get out a pen and paper, and this is mandatory. This is not something like, oh, well, maybe I'll just listen in this time. You're actually not going to get anything out of this session unless you get out a pen and paper, so please do that now, and we'll get to that in about 10 minutes. I want to spend a few minutes, first of all, just identify if there's any problems with playing the game. If so, put kind of a notice of that in the Q&A, and I'll switch to that and answer your questions. And really what this session is about is identifying whether or not you're engaged in these webinars. And the first way I can tell whether you're engaged in these webinars is, are you playing the game? Are you having any problems playing the game? When I see people having problems playing the game, it's usually because they're trying to understand the game. And the thing about this game is that it's not meant to be understood. Like, you can't understand these voices. You can't understand fear. You can't understand what it's like to be the controller. It's just a matter of kind of getting out of your own way and kind of getting your mind out of it and just allowing these voices to take over your body, your mind, your mouth, you know, your thoughts, all of that, and speak on their behalf. And so if you're the one that's trying to figure out the game, you're still playing the game. You're the voice of the one who's trying to figure out the game, but you're not actually the voice that I asked to speak to. So if you're having problems playing the game, please write something in the Q&A and tell me what the problem might be. And also notice if you wrote the letter to fear that I asked you to write last week, or if you wrote a new letter to fear, because if you remember, that was your homework, that you were supposed to write a new letter to fear and change your language about how you discuss or deal with fear. If you didn't write that letter, then that's what we're here to address. Remember the first webinar where I talked about the four different cups? Like, what kind of cup do you have extended to this tea ceremony? Do you have an upside down cup? You know, you're actually really not interested. You know, what that looks like is you don't get out the pen and paper. You don't play the game. You just kind of listen in the background. You don't write the letter to fear. Do you have a right side up cup, but it has a hole in the bottom of it? It's going in one ear and out the other. Again, you're not doing the homework. You're not really getting anything out of this. You're only half engaged. You know, you're only half listening. Third cup is when you have mud and dirt in your cup, if you remembered. And we're going to address that today as well. And then the fourth cup is if you have an open, empty, upright cup. And so if you have an open, empty, upright cup, I keep coming back to that. That's where you're going to get the most out of these sessions. So this session number three is all about your holdbacks. And believe me, we all have holdbacks. So I'm going to dissect them kind of one at a time, what I've seen over the years that people have as their holdbacks. So let's see, no Q&As. So no problems playing the game. Are you sure? I'm sure there's somebody out there that has had a problem playing this game. And if so, help me help you. I remember my teacher one time facilitated a 5-day workshop, and there were a couple hundred people there. And at the end of the 5 days, at the very end, one guy came up to him and said, I didn't get it. This is at the end of 5 days. So I'm not a mind reader, and nor was my teacher. You know, you'd think that this guy would have raised his hand the first hour of the first day. So please raise your hand now and let me know if you're having any problems playing the game. Oh, we have a Q&A. Let's see what we got. That you do a scan each morning. Are you specifically inviting fear or just noticing what discomfort is present? How do you determine what emotion is there? So I'm not specifically inviting fear when I do a body scan in the morning. Believe me, I don't need to do that. It's always there. So what you want to do in these process is when you do a body scan, and I'll really go into detail in the fourth session, our final session, on what that all looks like. But you don't want to like supercharge your fear or ramp it up or give it a shot of caffeine or any of that. You just want to notice what discomfort is already present. And there is always going to be discomfort present. I'm pretty sure that if I walked into a room of people that had just done a 9-day Vipassana retreat and I asked to speak to your discomfort or had them locate their discomfort in their body, they would definitely find it. Maybe in the form of cramps, yes, but fear is always there. You know, probably at the end of a 9-day Vipassana retreat, for example, you may be afraid that this pleasant moment is going to pass. So I said this before, I'll say it again. Discomfort, fear is there every single moment of every single day and nearly every single interaction we have if we're willing to be honest with ourselves. So the second part of the question is, how do you determine what emotion is there? So what I do is I don't try to understand or intellectually figure out what emotion is there. I just kind of notice the discomfort and I let the word or the name of it come to me. Like, oh, that feels like, ugh, right? And sometimes it doesn't even have a name. Like I might call it stress. I might call it anxiety. I might call it fear. I might call it anger, sadness. Sometimes these discomforts, they actually, you don't even need to give them a name. You can just give them a sound. Like, I just feel blah today. And we've all said that. You know, sometimes we can't come up with the right language. Like, words don't capture it. So it's kind of like when you jump into the Antarctic Ocean in the middle of winter and you jump out and you don't say, well, I appear to be feeling cold. You know, instead you're like, cold, cold, right? So that's how we can sometimes express the inexpressible. Rather than trying to use our intellect to try and figure out what kind of emotion is there. So thank you, Teresa, for your question. And I think we have another question here. Talk about the emotions and where they aren't in the body, are in the body. Well, you know, there's been a lot of studies done about where the emotions show up in the body. Like a lot of studies have suggested that if you have lower back pain, that's undealt with anger, for example. If you have, you know, stiff shoulders, that's undealt with fear. I don't really spend a lot of time focusing on that because for me, it's different for everyone. I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all situation. But part of the process is definitely noticing where it is that you feel the discomfort. And that's just kind of another way to have your radar up and really keeping you in your body instead of in your mind. Whenever we're dealing with fear, we always want to be in our body because that's where you're going to have the most honest relationship with fear, is just by paying attention to your body. And so, yes, if you have lower back pain, for sure, there's some sort of emotional component to that, or specifically a repression of emotion component to that. But I'm not too much of a stickler on, you know, whether it's repressed fear or repressed anger or repressed sadness, because if you repress an emotion, you repress inadvertently all of them. Like, you can't selectively repress one emotion without affecting them all. So that lower back pain may be just, you know, across the board suppression of all the emotions. All right, we have another question. I was in a social situation this weekend and I was so much in my head that I could not let go and listen to my fear. What would you suggest in that situation? Well, if we were just the two of us talking, I'd want to know what kind of activity was going on in your head. What would you suggest in that situation? Let go. You know, just even the words let go of your head, you know, all of a sudden now you're repressing your thoughts, or you just don't want to deal with your thoughts, or you're fighting a war with your thoughts. Here's what I do. And maybe we can all do this right now. Like, close your eyes and just notice your thoughts right now and give it a full stage. And it's kind of the same thing that we do with our emotions, where we just feel our emotions. You know, if your head's going all crazy, kind of monkey mind, you want to give it an open pasture, you know. If you're going to have a bull or a crazy wild horse, give it an open pasture. Let it do its thing. Because otherwise, then you're trying to fight a war against your thoughts. And you don't want to fight a war not only with your emotions, but with your thoughts. So close your eyes and just spend, let's say, 30 seconds. Just allowing your brain to do its thing. Now, again, you're not trying to ramp it up or give it a shot of caffeine. You're not trying to make it more crazy than it already is. Just give it the attention that it deserves. If your mind is screaming at you and doing backflips, it just wants attention, just like fear does. So spend that 30 seconds now. I'll do it too. And what should start to happen Much like any child that gets your undivided attention, it calms right down. And I'll tell you what, this is one of the best tricks I have for dealing with monkey mind in the middle of the night when you're trying to sleep. You know, if you turn towards it. Now, mind you, we're taught to turn away from it. We're taught to kind of go and do something to calm ourselves down, to get away from that craziness. But if you do the radical opposite, which is turn towards the thing that's keeping you away, which is sometimes, oftentimes your mind, you know, and you listen to it without trying to calm it down, just give it your undivided attention, just organically, it calms right down. So I hope that answered your question. And keep in mind, tonight is about our holdbacks. And so I appreciate these questions. And for sure on Thursday, it's a free, you know, range of questions. And I'm going to give you super practical things now that we've kind of dissected the whole problem that we have around fear and some of these voices that we want nothing to do with, including our monkey mind. So know that that's coming in our last session. And keep the questions coming. And I was kind of hoping that you guys would ask questions about playing the game. And if you have those, please, by all means, do ask them. But let's keep on target now for the rest of this Monday night course, our third session, because this is such an important thing to address. Because there may be a huge part of you that really wants to solve your problem. Like, what is the problem that made you sign up for these webinars? You know, there's a part of you that's like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna willing to do anything. You know, I've got to solve this problem. But there's another part of you that kind of has its foot on the brake, you know? So you have your foot on the accelerator and you have your foot on the brake. You know, what is that part that's on the, that has the foot on the brake? You know, that's what we're addressing tonight. And it's such an important thing to address because, I mean, we see it in everything. Like the most obvious one is dieting. You know, somebody like puts the Rocky theme music on and says, this is it, I'm going to do it. And what happens 2 days later, right? It all falls apart. And it's the same thing if you have depression. It's like, okay, now I know what that is, you know, what is repression of fear, you know, is helping cause that. Like, okay, I want to stop repressing my fear. I want to find a way to feel it. And you put the Rocky theme music on, but then 2 days later, you forget about these webinars and they come and go and nothing's changed. Like, what is that part of you that just gives up or stops or cup upside down or whatever it is? And so let's talk about those holdbacks. The first thing that I want to address about holdbacks is I have this list and I just created it last month. And this is after 30 years of doing this. And I am so excited about this list, but this is a list of payoffs that we have for keeping our problem around. I cannot tell you how many clients I have that show up in my life and they, you know, they really say, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so thirsty. You know, this is the analogy. I'm so thirsty. Please, please give me some water. I'm like, okay, here's some water. And they're like, they take it. They're like, oh yeah, I'm so thirsty. And, but they don't ever actually drink the water. You know, why is that? Like, what is holding them back? Like what, why won't they drink the water? Well, usually it's because they're getting some sort of payoff for being so thirsty. They get a payoff for having depression or panic attacks or anxiety disorders or insomnia or monkey mind or whatever it is that caused you to sign up for this webinar series. And you may be thinking, hell no, no way. There's no payoff. That's ridiculous. Well, listen to this list and see if you can recognize yourself in it. And I'm not going to read all of them. It's a full page, but I will send it to you afterwards. My problem is my identity. I wouldn't even know who I was without this problem. I see this a lot in younger adults, like if they're really depressed or broody or all of that. You know, it's their identity. This one's my favorite. Happy people annoy me. I don't want to be annoying. You know, if we're in the room, like raise your hand if you've ever been around a perpetually happy person, you know, and they're always on, like how fast do you want to like get away from them because they don't seem authentic, you know? So that's another one. Without this problem, I wouldn't feel as special. My suffering makes me feel special. Again, I see that with people who are young adults, depressed, you know, it makes them feel really special to be depressed. It's like, it's their identity. You know, they get a lot of attention for it, which is the next one. I get a lot of attention from people in my life because I have this problem. It may be negative attention, but at least it's attention. Next one, I struggle, therefore I am. Struggle makes me aware of my existence. What is that song? I bleed so I know I'm alive. I think that song really resonates with people for a reason. This is another one. I get financial assistance from a loved one because I'm too troubled or somehow disabled to work harder or even work at all. You know, there's a lot of people out there that can't work because they have a problem. And if they resolve the problem, you know, they're going to have to go to work and they're, you know, going to be off the dole. So either from a loved one or even the government. So that is definitely a reason to keep your problem around. Or, you know, this isn't on the list, but like if you're in a bad marriage, you know, so long as you have some sort of disability or problem, then you don't ever have to deal with your dysfunctional marriage. You don't ever have to get healthy enough that you then desire to leave, right? So then you don't have to leave your marriage. I mean, there's some really subtle ones that are in this list or not in this list that you can hopefully now start to identify in your own. I get empathy from a loved one. They show me how much they care about and consider me by putting up with me and my problem. That's a big one. This next one's for fear avoiders. I can't get better keeps me from having to do scary things or take any risks, you know, because these webinars are about fear, of course. You know, if you start to make friends with fear, well, guess what? You know, the fear, the avoidance of fear is actually kind of keeping you safe at home. But if you make friends with fear, then you're probably going to get off the couch and go out and do more scary things. And maybe you're not in the mood for that. Maybe you don't want to have that kind of life. You don't want to take risks. I can't get better keeps me from having to engage in the world at a higher level. Like if you avoid fear, you don't have to launch the new business. You don't have to take, you don't have to kind of bring kind of your best self out into the world go and fulfill your dreams and all of that. You know, it's scary to do that. And so this keeps you, if you keep your problem, from having to go out there and take those risks again. Sadness is a companion. This is for those who are depressed. Keeping my problem around makes me feel like a child. I don't want to have to grow up. Keeping my problem around, I can justify my behavior. This one, hopefully everyone will be able to relate to this. I want to solve this problem, and isn't that enough? It's like we see it all the time. Oh, but I'm trying. At least he's trying, you know? It's like the effort kind of looks like there's some movement, but even the trying or just wanting to want to solve the problem is a form of attachment to the problem. In having this problem, I don't have to take responsibility for my life. Try that one on. If I own my problem, that means my friends and family may be smug about it, like I told you so. Without the drama of my problem, life would be boring. Now, I see that one a lot with people. I had a client with borderline personality disorder, and you know, if she got rid of her problem, then her life would be really boring. It's like as long as she was at war with fear, life was really dramatic and exciting and tumultuous, and that made her feel alive. Without the drama of my problem, she wouldn't know how to spend her days. Now, note there are as many payoffs as there are people in the world. So be sure to come up with a few more on your own. Look at this list. I'm going to send it to you after this webinar. So that's obviously a huge pile of reasons why somebody might not start a fear practice or try to make friends with their fear after all. Because all of a sudden, you feel better, you calm down, you now have to kind of fulfill your, you know, like what you're here on this earth to accomplish. You know, you have to pursue your gifts, all of that. It requires you to kind of bring your bigger self to your life, you know. So notice those holdbacks. And moving on, if there's mud and dirt in your cup. So the mud and dirt, as if you remember, are kind of like your preconceived notions about who you are. The things that you know about who you are, your stories, your beliefs, your revelations that you've had over the years. And it's going to be really hard to realign your life at a higher level with fear so long as you have mud and dirt in your cup. And I kind of liken it to, I'm 51 years old. Like imagine that I've put $1 a day into a jar. After 51 years, I would have amassed a lot of money. And so, you know, I'm very, very invested, right, in who I believe myself to be. And so if I'm going to reinvent myself and realize like, oh my gosh, I've been repressing fear for since age two for the last 49 years. It's like, you know, you've maybe made some progress in fighting that war with fear and keeping that fear down, and to kind of start over again, you have to throw that jar of money away. You have to throw that investment away. You know, another analogy, maybe you've gone on one track for thousands and thousands of miles. And so to admit that, oh my gosh, I've been headed in the wrong direction, right? You know, I'd rather just keep on the same track I'm on. We also become, I have a great analogy for the last list too, that kind of supports the mud and dirt in a cup and the upside down cup and the hole in the bottom of the cup. But, you know, in monkeys, let's consider monkeys. In India, they hunt monkeys for food. Now, there's no like monkey food farms like we have chicken farms, right? They're all captured in the wild. But you go to market and you see these monkeys, they're in cages. They're still very much alive. They don't have like a snare around their leg or a bullet hole in their shoulder. Like, how do these hunters capture these monkeys? Well, what they do is they have a jar. They put a jar in the jungle and they put peanuts at the bottom of the jar, and they have like a Chinese wrist twister, you know, like those Chinese finger twisters where you can't get your finger out. So the monkeys come across these peanuts. They're like, oh my gosh, peanuts. They stick their hand in the jar and they grab onto the peanuts, and then they can't get their hand out. And they only have to let go of the peanuts and to get their hand out. But these hunters will come by 2-3 days later. These monkeys haven't eaten. They haven't slept, nothing for days. And they're still just clinging to those peanuts. It's like, just notice how much you cling to your habitual patterns, your mud, your dirt, your belief about who you are, your investment in what you've been doing regarding fear for decades. So these are all the things that are going to hold us back from realigning with fear in a different way. Now, hopefully last week, you realize that fear is not the problem. Kind of pushing fear down into the basement is the problem. Fear feels terrible down there, and thus so do you. You're fighting an unwinnable war with fear being carried out in your unconscious mind. All you have to do to end that war is just to make friends with fear. And how you do that is you turn to it with consideration, respect, learn how to feel it instead of think about it. It's like, it's not that hard, right? Much, much harder is to repress fear and fight that war your whole life. But owning and honoring fear also requires effort. You know, it's not as much of an effort, but it does require effort. And it's an effort unlike anything you've ever done before. Now, especially if you see fear as like this horrible thing and an enemy, you know, your whole life, like that effort is to, like, imagine if you've had an enemy, your roommate, you know, your whole life, like to then kind of turn towards that roommate after 40 years of fighting with them and saying, I'm sorry, kind of my fault, you know, can I make it up to you? Like, let's be friends. It's effort. It really is. So I get it. So if anybody has any questions, please submit them now. And if you remember, while I'm waiting for questions, back up. I want you to get a pen and paper. What we're going to do next requires you to have a pen and paper. You're not going to get anything out of the next hour unless you have a pen and paper. So any Q&As about everything I've outlined so far? All right, let's see if they come in. Now, this next hold back, because that's all we're doing this session, is probably one of the bigger holdbacks that I see. It's called false self. So false self is the foot on the brake that's kind of down deep in your unconscious mind. It's like way down there. So you may say like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to have a fear practice. I'm going to take all of Kristen's advice. And that's the foot on the accelerator. This is the foot on the brake. So false self is anybody that's been to a therapist has kind of dissected a little bit of false self, but we're going to make it really simple tonight. False self is the part of you that gets established between age 2 and 12 as you come into form as a separate egoic being. So we'll back up. You know, when we're babies, right? Why do we love babies so much? Babies are still connected to source, the infinite. There's no ego yet. And then the terrible twos happen. Why do we call them the terrible twos? Because that's when the child develops its ego. That's when the child develops its sense of self. And that's what an ego is. It becomes aware that I'm not you, you're not me, to mom and dad, right? And they get a sense of an I persona. So separate self, right, forms, and separate self is another name for false self. So no one is without a false self. And let me explain why it's called false self, besides the fact that that's what Ken Wilber calls it. But false self is this kind of protective mechanism that comes in. There's the voice of the protector that takes in this enormous amount of information that's coming at this 2 to 12-year-old that is overwhelming and tries to make sense of the world, make sense of that child's place in it. So it could take a single sentence from dad, like, you're stupid, and form a whole persona around it. Like if you say you're stupid to a 30-year-old, it doesn't have as much of an impact as it does certainly to a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old, right? And so that kind of impact may actually wind up being positive, like you're so stupid, oh yeah, well I'm going to prove to you that I'm not, or that child could start to believe that they're just really stupid and there's something wrong with them, you know, or take on a sentence from a child on the playground, like you're ugly, and form a whole persona around that. You know, we're very sensitive. So false self is this protective mechanism to make sense of this overwhelming amount of information coming in between 2 and 12, and we take it on as our core. And how we walk and talk and carry ourselves throughout our whole lives is oftentimes just this voice. And until we start to kind of question it or challenge it, it will always be in our undercurrent, and it does not like change, and that's your foot on the brake. So hopefully everybody has their pen and paper out now, and we're going to go on a journey to dissect what your false self is. So get your pen and paper ready, and I want you to identify a time recently, maybe in the last week, in the last month at the most, you know, when you went through a super difficult, intense experience that invoked kind of a negative emotional reaction, where there was like some sort of colossal failure between you and your wife, or, you know, road rage, whatever it is. And write down one sentence about this. I don't want too much. It's like my fight with my wife last night, you know, screaming at the neighbor last month. That's all I want you to write down right now. So that's the first step towards identifying false self. I'm going to give you a moment to do that. And what's different here is that we don't have to dissect or talk about the story behind that, because that is not necessary. The only thing I'm interested in is the emotional and physical sensations that you felt. So step two is I want you to identify the emotional feeling that you had during that argument or that uncomfortable failure time. Did you feel angry? Did you feel depressed? Did you feel hurt, frustrated, sad? I want you to write down the emotional component of that argument or that failure right now. Write down as much as you can come up with. How did you feel during this argument? Did you feel afraid? Did you feel disgust? Did you feel frustrated? So keep writing those, but also now start to add in your physical sensations. And physical sensations may be like tension. I felt hot. I felt nauseous. So write those down as well. Did you feel shaky? Did you feel cold? So we're writing down emotional and physical sensations, which are different. Did you get red in the face? When you're done, I want you to close your eyes and go inward And I want you to feel these feelings now. I want you to feel these emotions, these physical sensations. Not interested in the story anymore. I just want you to feel these feelings now. Not think about them, but actually feel them. And as you have your eyes closed and you're inward feeling these emotional and physical sensations, I now want you to kind of capture this feeling in words or a picture to really drive it home. Like if you were an artist and you were to create a painting of what you were feeling, you know, what would it be? Or if you were a poet, you know, like I feel like an elephant that's trapped in a cage, you know, buried beneath the ground and I can't breathe. Or I feel like a top spinning in circles and just out of control. So write down that picture, you know, those words now. Drive it all the way home. Now I want you to go back in time when you remember feeling this way, or when these words or pictures kind of felt right, you know, like you felt this before, to another time in your life. And then go back to another time even before that, that you felt these emotional, physical reactions. Stay in your body. And then I want you to go back to the earliest time that you remember feeling these emotions, these physical sensations, or these words or pictures are really captured in how you feel. Notice how old you are. Now, I know that it's not the same factual situation, but notice if there's people around, if you're indoors, if you're outdoors. So it's not the same factual experience, but it's the same inner experience. And stay in your body. And as you're there, I now want you to write down about 10 or 15 sentences that really captures kind of your interpretation of this experience. And what that might look like is, I feel frustrated. I feel invisible. Everybody is so messed up. There's something wrong with the world. Like, what captures kind of the essence of what you're feeling? And stay in your body and just let the words come to you. This is the framework for what you're feeling. However you're interpreting this moment. I'm going to give you some suggestions of other sentences I've heard over the years, besides the ones you've already written down. I feel invisible. I don't deserve anything better than this. I'm incompetent. I'm perverted. There's something wrong with me. I'm boring. I'm depressing to be around. I'll never make it. This is all my fault. So keep writing them down. I want about 10 or 15. And I'm going to ask for volunteers to be facilitated. Now, I'm not going to have you tell me your sentences. There's nothing personal to be revealed here whatsoever. But whoever wants to be in the hot seat, this is going to be a very interesting experience for you. So I'm hoping that you'll raise your hand in chat, looking for a few volunteers. So as you continue to write down your sentences, let me tell you a few of my sentences, because the first time I did this with myself, my false self is, nobody is ever going to love me. And as I read these, just notice if they inspire some sentences with you. Everyone is too caught up in their own lives to see or consider me or my experience. I feel alone. I feel invisible. I feel misunderstood. I feel unseen for my goodness. There's something wrong with other people. The world is a fucked up place. Excuse my French. Screw them. I hate them. I'll just have to take care of myself. So those are my sentences that I came up with. This is your false self. And I'm bringing this up in, you know, fear and anxiety course, because a lot of our false self is kind of the origination of where our fears come from. And it's like we're so influenced by our false self in everything we do, everything that we fight, everything that we are. We develop patterns around the false self. Some of us embrace it, some of us fight it. It's such a big, big, hairy deal in our lives. And at the core of it is primary fear, because, you know, that two-year-old, that's when the two-year-old really starts to realize this world is a really scary place. So this is one of the best things you can do to kind of get unstuck from repressive patterns, not only around your emotions, but all of these sentences. And so now at this point, we're kind of taking this even beyond the repression of fear, but the repression of, like for me, the feelings of alone, feelings of being invisible, or hatred, you know, the voice of hatred, unlovable. So we're not just kind of dissecting at this point fear and anger, sadness, but actually all of shadow, all of those 10,000, you know, we have 10,000 children, like those 5,000 children or those 5,000 employees that we want nothing to do with. And oftentimes people fight a war against false self their whole life. And I want to just kind of shine the light of consciousness on that war now. So, Ben, thank you for volunteering first.
Hello.
Hi. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of false self. And know that false self is an amalgamation of all the sentences that you just wrote down. And I want everybody to kind of shift and be in this voice as well, and answer my questions in your own mind. But you, Ben, are going to answer these questions out loud. So who am I speaking to?
The false self.
Okay. And, you know, we can call you the, and that's a different flavor than just false self. You know, like there's the Kristen and then there's Kristen. And so let's just call you false self so that it's kind of more direct and it feels less like a noun. So who am I speaking to?
False self.
All right. So just notice how you feel, first of all. And in particular, I want you to notice, first and foremost, are you Ben? Is Ben you?
No, I'm not Ben. Ben's not me.
Right. How big of an influence do you have on Ben?
Pretty big influence.
Are you aware of yourself? Is Ben aware of you? Or is this the first time that you really kind of realize that you even exist and he realizes that you exist?
I think Ben is aware of these sentences that Ben wrote down. He realizes those and identifies with some of those, and so he is aware of me to that extent.
Right, he knows that some of the voices or sentences that make up you exist. How does he react to you and your sentences and your kind of way of looking at the world?
He tends to move away from them, to not cower, that's not the right word, but to try not to acknowledge them and to just kind of ignore them and kind of hope they go away.
Otherwise known as he tries to ignore you and hopes mm-hmm. that you go away.
Right.
He ignores you. And, you know, I see that with fear, right? Some people ignore fear. Some people fight fear. Some people avoid fear, right? So he just ignores you. And some people also go to a therapist to try to dissect you and why you're here and why you have the sentences that you have, you know, which is interesting, but it doesn't really change the relationship very much between the two of you. Would you say that you're in the basement then?
Yes.
All right. Allow me please to speak to the voice of false self in the basement. Who am I speaking to?
False self in the basement.
All right. So you're down here in the dark with no food, no water, no love. Doesn't want to have anything to do with you. And if he does want to have something to do with you, he wants to go to a therapist as a way to try and understand you, as a way to ultimately then get rid of you, right? Or fix you or change you in some way. So how do you feel given all these circumstances?
Angry. I feel angry. I feel tight. I feel like I want to fight. Mm-hmm. I feel tense. And I feel on edge.
And whatever any voice feels, he feels. So if you feel this way, then that means that Ben feels this way as well. You're a big deal. You're such a huge part of the human experience, not just for Ben, but for everyone. And we have such a blind relationship with you. It's like he's blind to you, you're even blind to yourself. And so this is kind of a big moment for you, a big moment for him, where you guys can see each other, right? See what kind of relationship you have. So you feel pretty crummy, don't you?
Yeah, I feel ignored.
Okay.
Yeah.
What should we do about you? You know, and here's the thing. You're here. You were here. You're like part of the perfect design to help him as a young boy make sense of the world and come into form as an egoic being. But he's not 12 anymore. And you know what's so interesting? Speaking as Kristen, I volunteered for the Big Brothers Big Sisters program once. And I said, okay, well, I want a teenager. Hook me up with a teenager. And they said, oh, well, we don't work with teenagers. I said, well, why not? And they said, well, past the age of 12, they're cooked. You know, there's like, you're a wasted resource. They can't be helped past then. You know, there's such an understanding that once you as the false self kind of take form, you know, you're either going to really run Ben's life or whoever's life. You know, you're showing up in your own unique way, but you're going to run Ben's life in his own unique way. And that's it, you know, we're done. And you're covert, you're underground, you're in the basement. So at this point, you're repressed. So you're either coming out as an exaggerated kind of yelly, screamy version of yourself, or you're coming out redirected as just anger and, you know, whatever the feelings that you just outlined are. You know, what do we do about you?
You should Ben feels the thinking voice right now.
Why don't we start with this, right? Because, I mean, you're young, right? 2 to 12. You've been locked in the basement probably for a really long time. You haven't been able to see clearly for a really long time. I'm kind of asking a lot of you. And so I've been doing this for a while. I'm your best friend. You know, I'm here to help. I'm here to help you and Ben have a better relationship. So let's start with that. But let's keep our antenna up and our radar up about what people typically do regarding you. I kind of already outlined some of the things, like we see a therapist to try to understand you. We try to fix you. We try to change you. So let's just start with baby steps. Like, should we try to change you?
No.
Why not?
Because I'm here to help.
Yeah, it's a little disrespectful to you. You're here to help.
Because I provide some protection.
You actually provide a lot for people. I have a saying, you know, to parents, like, don't worry about messing up your kids, because you're going to mess up your kids. It's just part of life, you know? The key is to mess up your kids in just the right way that they're motivated by their problems rather than held back by them, which is another way of saying, like, the key is like, can you, as the voice of false self, motivate Ben as an adult? Like, or do you hold him back? Because I'll tell you right now, just reading my false self, you know, persona, you know, Kristen became the best in the world at a very difficult sport for 12 years. And so just going back over my sentences, nobody is ever going to love me. It's like, there she was feeling me, and she jumps off a cliff and people start to love her. It's like, I'm so unpleasant and so uncomfortable that she starts, you know, doing these incredibly daring feats. Everybody is too caught up in their own lives to see or consider me or my experience. So I'll tell you what, you jump off a 70-foot cliff, people see you and they consider your experience, and people just wanted to write about her in these magazines. It's like everybody wanted to know what her opinion was about everything. I feel alone. I feel invisible. Well, she wasn't invisible jumping off those cliffs, and people wanted to hang out with her. She was no longer alone. There's something wrong with other people. The world is a screwed up place. Like, that's my sentence. And so she had this super big grudge, actually, specifically towards men. And skiing is a masculine sport. You know, there's a lot of men, and she was very competitive against the men. She couldn't care less about being competitive against the women. She just wanted to kind of prove that she was better than the men. And, you know, that didn't bode well for her relationships, but I'll tell you what, it made her a rock star in a male-dominated sport. Screw them, I hate them, actually, is how she felt. So it took a long time for her to kind of come to terms with me and regarding that and men, you know, screw men, I hate them. And here's the last one. I'll just have to take care of myself. It's actually, so I actually have led her to be the strong, independent woman that she has become. So can you see that some of your sentences, you can look down and dissect, and hopefully everybody's doing this, that, you know, actually you can really motivate people. And there's a saying, you know, your greatest wound is your greatest treasure. Like, you as false self, there's a lot of wound in you. And you can either motivate somebody and kind of make them grow. Or, like, the Buddha was stabbed by a knife, supposedly, one day, and it made him grow and grow and grow and grow until the knife was just like a toothpick and he flicked it away. But other people, you get stabbed by a knife and you slowly start to die. So are you helping Ben thrive and grow, or have you? Or are you making him wither?
Making him wither.
Right. The reason why I helped Kristen grow is because she didn't realize it at the time, but she just ate me like manna. You know, she just really embraced. And this is all about embracing. You know, if these voices, if fear, if you help the self, then it's because she's embracing. If you hold the self back, it's because he's ignoring and fighting or trying to control or will away or rationalize away or therapy away or all of that. And it really is that simple. And so that's when I said, you know, what should we do about you? Well, you know, as with every voice, every child, every employee in this corporation, including you, and you're a big, big deal, you know, if we can find a way to honor you, be conscious of you, first of all, you know, that's really, really important. Like, not only be conscious that you exist, but also be conscious of our relationship, the nature of our relationship with you. Oh, well, I've been controlling you or ignoring you. You know, that's not the best way to treat a child. That's certainly not the best way to treat you. So you see, we're kind of organically going to answer the question, what do we do about you? Well, the same thing that we do regarding fear. I want to move on to Rob, but before we do that, I've kind of just given you a huge earful. So as the voice of false self, is there anything that you want to say or comment on?
I feel hungry. I feel like I haven't been fed. And I feel like I don't mean to hold back. I don't mean to hold Ben back. I'm trying to, I want him to do well. I want to motivate him.
What would it take for him to have that kind of relationship with you where you motivate him and help him rather than hold him back?
Well, he'd have to listen to me. He'd have to listen to me and I would listen to him. And he needs to not avoid me. He needs to have a conversation with me so that I can show him how I can help him.
I've been teaching for a really long time, decades now. And some things that I found, like the best kind of practices that really keep us in flow with our lives, that really keep us unstuck, you know, one of them is to realize that we are not our thinking mind and our thinking mind is not us. Like, that's huge. And we kind of did that in our first webinar. Another one is to realize that I am not my false self. Ben is not you. You are not him. Like, that's a huge, profound realization. But you guys have a relationship. And the question that came up earlier too, like, how do I calm down the monkey mind? How do I get rid of false self? How do I, you know, control and conquer fear? It always comes kind of back to, like, the third thing that I think is really important is, can we make friends with all of our employees? Can we make friends with all of our children? That's ultimately what it always comes back to. And so if a voice is causing problems in your life, it's usually because you've been either ignoring it, fighting it, you know the language, and only its kind of pathology will be available to the self. But if they own and honor the thinking mind, you know, it calms right down. If they own and honor you, you know, and also be aware of you, because that awareness is so important. And sometimes just to see it is to stop it. So again, it's also the same thing with fear or any of these shadow voices. And you're an amalgamation of a lot of shadow voices. So we're covering a lot of ground just by talking to you. And you said it beautifully. So thank you. And we're headed in that direction. So let's get Rob in the hot seat next. And Ben, I may come back to you. Ben's false self. Okay.
So are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
Allow me please to speak to the voice of false self in the basement.
This is the voice of the false self in the basement.
Okay.
Yes, you're speaking to him.
Okay. So notice how you feel. What you're aware of. And, you know, I've been talking to somebody else's false self. You know, everybody has a voice called you. Tell me what your reaction is to everything that's been discussed so far.
My reaction is both positive and negative, because I appreciate that a lot of where Rob is today and a lot of the positive things about Rob are part of my influence. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully if he's been listening to the conversation, he'll recognize that it isn't that I'm just not 100%. I'm not 100% negative. I haven't been 100% negative influence in his life. That a lot of the way he's learned to react to my my doubts or inhibitions has actually turned out very positive for him. And so
I'm going to pause you for a second there, because I have a really interesting point. I could have also done this exercise trying to dissect you by saying to the self, like, think of a time in your life where you felt absolute radiant love, you know, and a positive emotional experience, you know, capture the emotional and physical sensations of that. Remember the earliest time that you felt that. And that's part of you too. But the thing is, every voice has a great wisdom and a great delusion, you know, love and joy and comfort and all that, you know, also offers something wonderful, but there's a delusion in that as well. And so you as false self at this point, we're kind of only looking at one side of the coin. You know, there's another side of the coin where the child's interpretation of dad saying, I love you, and you're, you know, a genius at math or whatever, you know, that's there too. And so let's acknowledge that, you know, that plays a role in what you are. But the reason why I'm particularly interested in the bad part of you is because while it's easy to see the delusion in the bad part of life, the bad part of you, it's harder to see the wisdom. And while with the nice stuff, it's easy to see the wisdom in the nice stuff, the nice interpretations, it's much harder to see the delusion. You know, and we all see kids growing up in really loving, caring, considerate households, and oftentimes they're not really prepared for the shocking realities of the negative side of life when they get out. And so over here, we can see that kind of the lovely side of you, you know, can also hurt the self. So I think that you're kind of capturing that just organically by talking. And you're also capturing the fact that your kind of bad part to you as false self really actually helps Rob succeed. And, you know, you look at somebody that we admire and they have a false self too, and they're just super motivated. Like maybe they have something really big to prove, right? If you look, kind of dissect beneath the surface of people that you admire, we're going to find you, and we're going to find some sort of pathology or delusion behind their, you know, working 100-hour work weeks, I guarantee. So thank you for bringing that up. Go ahead.
Just to make sure that I'm, you know, on the right track. I wrote down while Ben, I think it was talking. I said, look at the good side of the false self, as well as the negative stuff. The good stuff gave me such a base. My false self helped me grow, helped me be what I am today. And at stages through my life, I embraced my false self. Yeah, I embraced my false self in parts of my life and just powered on. So I think I'm the false self now.
All right. Allow me please to speak to the voice of the false self. And notice, you know, the noticing is the most important part. If we follow a voice to have a realization and want to write it down, that's great. But now who am I speaking to?
The false self in the basement. And, you know, the gripe that I've got is that Rob hasn't thought of me for such a long while. And, you know, I want to be remembered for the part that I played in him growing to the person he is today. And, you know, I hope he gets to understand and recognize that what may seem initially negative to him, in some ways has motivated him to a life of a more powerful life, a more exciting life, a more fulfilled life. And I just want to bang on the wall and let him know that I'm here. And maybe we can develop an ongoing communication.
Because just because he hasn't thought of you in a long while, that doesn't mean you're not there, right?
Right, that's right.
And it doesn't mean that you're not still deeply influencing his life.
Yep.
Right. And, you know, is it best serving this corporation called Rob to keep you in the basement? No.
No.
Right.
Best serving if he recognizes me that I'm part of the system and part of the life. And, you know, I've got something to offer in a lot of situations. I just think there's a little bit, so this is Rob's hat on now. So Rob thinks that there's a bit of common sense getting down to the basement and understanding that is still there and is still because of a lack of recognition is still inhibiting in some instances. And that's Rob. That's the whole self. Yep.
It's really important for humanity, people in general, at some point to recognize you, you know, get the radar up about you. People just are so unconscious to the role that you play in their lives. And by the way, as I'm talking, if somebody else would like to volunteer to be in the hot seat, now would be the time to do it. Is that? Mm-hmm. All right. So, but no, I lost my train of thought. Understanding the incredible role that you play in humanity's life, in the self's life, is one of the most profound experiences, because recognizing, first of all, that you're not the self and the self is not you, it always begs the question, what then is the self if not you? And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate that Ken Wilber called you false self. Really, another name for you is separate self. We could give you all sorts of names. I believe that the reason why he called you false self is because you're not kind of the authentic manifestation of all that Rob or Ben or any of us can be, you know, that people are so much more, but it seems so much that you just take over and the self walks and talks and carries the form of you. They even take on the physical form of you. You know, people who carry a lot of excess weight, or I had a client once who, she was supposed to be about 6'3", but because of you, and she was just hiding through adolescent, and she's probably only 5'10". I mean, she shrunk by 5 inches just by, you know, taking on the persona of you. And that's how she is. It's like she's even physically deformed because of you. And people, you know, that's how big of a role you play in people's life, you know, from start to finish. And it's not like we're ever going to get rid of you. And people say, oh, well, I just need to manifest and nurture true self, you know. I say, instead, let's just honor you, take you out of the basement, welcome you into this corporation and your incredible influence, you know, make friends with you, of course, like I always suggest that we do with any voice that's locked in the basement. And that's kind of where we're going next. So thank you very much. And who's our next volunteer? So I believe we have Steve coming up. Excellent job, our hot seat volunteers. This is a big voice. What's that? Steve, unmute yourself. Unmute is lower left-hand corner. Steve, are you there? All right. Well, then I guess I'll go back to Ben until I see Steve showing up unmuted. Ben, allow me please to speak to the voice of false self locked in the basement. Who am I speaking to?
False self locked in the basement.
All right. So, first of all, what would it mean to you? Because there's a payoff of locking you in the basement, you know? I want you to look at the self and see the payoff of that. There's also a payoff of owning you. There's a cost of keeping you locked in the basement too. Just kind of put that into the mix and just tell me, what could you offer the self? I mean, he's not 12 years old anymore, right? It's time to move on. What could you offer him? Look at what he wants out of his life. What do you see that he wants?
I could offer him confidence, more belief in himself. I could offer him less aversion to uncertainty. I could offer him more peace of mind.
These are things that he wants. My guess is he also wants to find his authentic self, his true self. You know, does his true self and his authentic self include you?
Yes.
It's like, in many ways, I see him as, I think I said this last week, a puzzle piece made up of 10,000 different realities. And you're one of those. And within the puzzle of the whole universe, right? And he's the puzzle piece that makes up the whole universe. And here's just this small part, but you play such a huge role, especially if you're repressed and locked in the basement. And so we look at what he wants to be and accomplish and become, and he wants to become his most magnificent, colorful puzzle piece self. And it's not in the radical denial of you. It's actually kind of in the radical inclusion of you and the acknowledgement of you. And at some point, though, we are supposed to move on from you, but take you along in the process, acknowledge you, thank you. And I'd like to do that now. Before we do that, though, just specifically tell me, what really does he want out of his life? What do you see he wants?
See that. He wants inner peace. He wants to have more knowing and confidence and peace in his direction and who he is, less questioning.
Would he have less questions if you were a welcomed, honored part of his corporation? Would he have more peace if you had more peace? Would he have more confidence if he had confidence in you? You know, all these things that he wants. You know, it's not like he wants to become president of the United States or become a billionaire. You know, it's all an inner experience. And, you know, what better way to have a better inner experience than to make friends with your inner child? And let's do that now. Let's kind of take you out, invite you along on the process. And I just want to make sure, though, as he's contemplating this change, as he's kind of looking to have a higher experience than the one that he's having, you know, do you feel threatened in any way that he wants to kind of move beyond, well, you, for starters, and kind of you is the war with you. And I get that he wants to move on from the war with you, but, you know, as the voice of false self, you know, you're here to protect him. Are you okay with him evolving beyond you past this point?
I am, because I'm confident in myself and the job that I'm doing. And so if I'm allowed to do my job, I'm okay with him taking the benefit from me and moving forward. Yeah.
Okay. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of false self, completely owned and honored, out of the basement, out in the fresh air and sunshine. And everybody that's watching, listening, I want you to look at your list. And so you're now kind of owning and honoring maybe your powerlessness or your feelings of aloneness or your unlovability, your hatred of other people, for me, feeling misunderstood. It's like owning and honoring the voice of misunderstood even. So this is a big moment. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of false self being owned and false self owned and honored.
Okay. So just take a moment. And just notice what that's like for you, how you feel physically, what that's like for the self. It's a big deal. Like the radical inclusion of all these perceived negative, you know, voices and despair and loneliness and pain and struggle and feelings of stupidity and ugliness or whatever, you know, makes up you, you're now out in the fresh air and the sunshine and, you know, he's radically embracing you rather than fighting a war with you. So notice what that's like for you and for him. And the beauty of this moment too is all of a sudden now we're embracing all that life has to offer, not just the bad, or not just the good, right? And trying to repress the bad. But this is a very Zen moment because we're seeing all that life has to offer and seeing kind of the good in all of it. And we can even take it a step further, you know, not just owning and honoring you, but becoming intimate with you. And I believe that that's what the Buddha experienced, just by being intimate with all things, being intimate with the good, the bad. You know, that is the question, that's the koan, the riddle that's kind of constantly tickling us during this practice. Like, how can I make friends with all that life has to offer me? And in doing so, we get to kind of be a more whole, complete puzzle piece. And with this, allow me please to speak to the voice of true self. Who am I speaking to?
True self.
Okay, just close your eyes. No longer in denial of anything. Now fully facing the truth of who and what we are, the truth of what life is about, the good, the bad. I'm stupid sometimes. I'm smart sometimes. I'm ugly sometimes. I'm beautiful sometimes. Your true self. Maybe we shouldn't have even given you a name. You're just the kind of the, maybe not the opposite of false self, or but maybe the evolution of false self, like transcending and including. It's like taking this part of us and kind of bringing it along for the ride. And like, what am I now? What's it like to be you, your true self?
Welcoming, open. Happy, aware, inclusive, understanding.
You know, I'm reminded of the war of, I believe it was 1812. And I may get this wrong, but the Battle of New Orleans. And it was between the British and the Americans. And the war had actually already ended, but this is before the internet and before, you know, even Morse code, I believe. And nobody had gotten the memo in New Orleans. And there was this horrendous battle a month after the war ended, and like 3,000 people died. You know, we got to get the memo. The war is over. We've got to stop fighting these wars, like make friends with our bits and pieces so there's no more casualties. You know, so the war is over. peace ensues. You know, that's what we always get after war. And now we can kind of just figure out what wants to happen next. So as the voice of true self, just notice what wants to happen next. And maybe this doesn't even need an answer. This is a beautiful meditation. And only so much as we're really willing to own and embody false self can we really ever truly get to true self, rather than just fighting a war against the truth of who and what we are. So here we are as true self, and we could stay here and meditate for the next 15 minutes. It would be a gorgeous experience. But I am always promising that I want to try and make this a practical experience, you know, and help, you know, us resolve problems rather than just have one gorgeous moment and then just go back to habitual patterns after the end of the webinar series. So with that, just allow me please to speak to the voice of the self, you know, Rob, Ben, Kristen, whoever's on. But it's not the same self as from 75 minutes ago. It's now the self that's had this experience, and you can't ever undo this experience. You know, it's kind of like once you visit Paris, right? Now you have a sense of Paris. You know what it's like to have false self out of the basement. We know what it's like. We've had a glimpse of being true self. And while there, maybe we smelled the roses and felt the wind on our hair. And, you know, we can't undo that experience. And so here we are now at the end of this, like, what do we do now? Like, how do we get back there again? You know, ultimately what we want to do is make friends with ourselves at our core. Ultimately, we want to have a bigger experience in our lives besides false self. Ultimately, we want to figure out the truth of who and what we are. We want to find our true self. Our authentic self could be another name for it. How do we do that? Well, ultimately, next week, or actually later this week, Thursday, I'm going to give really practical step-by-step plan on how to be in flow with your life, how to kind of be free from these wars that we just kind of so unconsciously started, and make friends with them all. It's like drop by drop by drop, we become a mighty river. Well, how do we do that when we're just going to go unconscious again? And I'm reminded of a story where there was a king and he had a scribe, and there was a problem in their kingdom where somebody had poisoned the wheat stores. And anybody that ate the wheat, it wouldn't kill them, but it would make them go insane. And so they figured it out pretty quickly. A few people went insane, and they said, okay, don't eat the wheat. The king said, and the scribe said, don't eat the wheat. And so they went about their lives avoiding the wheat. And then pretty soon, of course, they ran out of all other food besides the wheat. And then everyone in the kingdom had to make a decision. Do I eat the wheat and go insane, or do I starve to death and not eat the wheat? And so some people starved to death, some people ate the wheat, and that was the end. And the only people that were left either not dead or not insane was the king and his scribe. And the king's like, oh my gosh, what a disaster. What do I do? And the scribe said, well, I didn't tell you this because I know you would have shared it with people and bought them another few months, but we have a full grain storage shed of enough wheat to feed you and me for the rest of our lives. We'll be fine. You know, these people need a king. You can't go insane. You've got to help them in any way you can. I recommend you eat this untainted wheat. And the king said, I can't do that. You know, I need to meet my people where they are. So he decided that he was going to eat the tainted wheat and go insane. And the scribe was going to as well. Right before they did that, the scribe, though, thought of an idea. And he put his finger in some paint and he put a dot on the king's forehead and he put a dot on himself. And he said, as they were about to eat the wheat, that we're about to go insane, but hopefully at some point we'll look in a mirror and we'll see this dot on our forehead and we'll remember to remember who we really are. So what is your dot on your forehead? What is going to be the thing that's going to remind you to remember your true self and who you are? And that changing also this repressive kind of approach towards fear, towards false self, towards all of these shadow voices. Like, what is going to help you remember to remember past this moment? Because remember, false self doesn't like to change. We're certainly kind of in an unconscious habitual relationship with it. It's a foot on the brake. You know, we have all this mud and dirt in our cup, kind of going back to the beginning of this webinar. Like, there's all these things that are kind of working against us. Our ego doesn't like to change. You know, it's so interesting. I see like mountain bikers, they go for a mountain bike ride and they have this expanded experience. And then we drink a beer to compress back down. You know, we're always looking to just come back to what's familiar. And I have this list, you know, we also get a huge payoff of everything that is our habitual pattern. And it's like, I call it our stinky teddy bear or our fur-lined rut. And so as you consider having a shadow practice, a fear practice, maybe even a false self practice, it's just important to remember that you're going to go unconscious again. You're going to go insane. You're going to forget. And the best way, and this is the practical tips, is just starting a practice around this stuff, like being willing to own your shadow. I'm reminded of a story of a worm, you know, who pokes his head out of the dirt and he sees another worm right there. And he says, "Oh my gosh, you're the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen. Marry me," the worm says. And the other worm says, "I can't, silly. I'm the other side of you." Like, can we have some sort of practice where we're willing to fall in love with all the many parts of our lives, willing to fall in love with our feelings of unlovability, right? Willing to kind of embrace our feelings of misunderstanding or aloneness or frustration or fear or anger or sadness or all those things that make up your false self or those emotions that we want nothing to do with. So that's ultimately our practice. How we do that. So that is what our final session is going to be about on Thursday. And I want to, and please write some questions down, Q&A. Here's your homework. I want to just make the last session less about voice dialogue, shift the game of 10,000 wisdoms, and more just about answering your questions. And some people sent me questions about what they hope these webinars would accomplish before they even started. And I have my little list here. Somebody wanted to know what to do about PTSD, about traumatic brain injury. Somebody wanted to find out how to be more aware of fear in their bodies. Insomnia. And then, of course, fear of insomnia, because this is ultimately a fear webinar series. Somebody wanted to know what to do about monkey mind. I kind of touched upon that at the beginning of our session tonight, where you don't try to quiet it down. You actually just turn towards it and let it do its thing. Now, that's not to say that you don't ramp it up or give it a shot of caffeine. You just let it do its thing organically, and it calms right down. Somebody wanted some ideas about what to do about a negative body image. Well, again, you know, can you find a way to not love your body, right? That's a way to repress your negative feelings of your body, right? Can you find a way to embrace your negativity about your body? And, you know, that's kind of a mouthful, but like, can you find a way to really own and honor that you just hate your body and just sit with it? You know, I just really hate my body. Not trying to get rid of it, not trying to push past it, not trying to override it by falling in love with your body, but can I just sit and hate my body? And what happens is organically, you know, it kind of resolves itself. You take it out of the basement, you show it some love. First of all, it loses its magical powers over you. You press it, any voice that you repress has magical powers over you, and it kind of consumes your life. The magical powers over it are gone. You have an honest relationship with the fact, like, hey, I hate my body. you kind of come to terms with that. And here's the thing, whenever you take a voice out of the basement, I hear the same language over and over again. I feel freedom. I feel just such relief. I feel so kind of peaceful and calm. So can you take it out of the basement? I hate my body. And all of a sudden, by owning it, you have that peace that you're looking for. It's not necessarily about your body, although that organically comes, but that's another conversation. And then we're also going to tap into the wisdom next week of all these voices. I call it fear hacking or insecurity hacking or hate hacking even. Like all of these voices are here to offer us something absolutely gorgeous. So what I want for your homework, you ready for this? See, these are just a few of the people that have written me and what they asked for was great. I want you to submit what you want for like a practical, practical step-by-step journey of what to do next, because next week or Thursday is going to be our last webinar. You're not going to have me facilitating you anymore. It's like, what do I do next? Well, what one person does who wants to look at PTSD is different from somebody who has a body image problem. And so I want to just give you an actual step-by-step program of what to follow after these webinars are over. Usually it'll be about a month of practice. Usually it will take only about a couple minutes of your day that will turn everything around, that will end these wars and just kind of set you on course to being more headed towards the type of person you want to be and accomplish the things that you want to accomplish. So to reiterate, your homework is to submit your questions to me. Fair enough? And I'm going to address them one by one. Anybody have any questions? What we've been doing so far is just kind of dissecting the problem. And the dissection is important because we want to be aware of what the actual problem is. It's like the problem is not that I have a negative body image. The problem is that I don't want to have a negative body image, you know, and thus I'm in a resistance expression with regard to that. The problem is never fear in our lives. It's the fact that we don't want to have anything to do with fear. PTSD, for example, is, you know, think of the military. You know, they train people specifically how to be emotionless, right? The image of the sergeant screaming at the guy in basic training, you know, while he stands there stoically, like they're specifically taught how to repress their emotions in the military. And then you go through a very deeply, horribly unpleasant emotional experience and they don't know how to deal with their emotions. Of course, they're going to come home with PTSD. I had PTSD for years for my ski career because I didn't know how to deal with my emotions either. And so I'm going to give like very practical steps on what to do about PTSD. So submit your questions to me and we'll meet next week and start this practice. I call it fear practice. And no questions and answers? Great. I guess that's a good sign. thank you. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me today. Don't forget to fall in love with your false self.